In the garden of an enclosed religious community, a young novice sat gazing at the profusion of blossom on a nearby apple tree. In spite of the beauty with which she was surrounded, the novice was sad. For as she looked, the thought uppermost in her mind was that the apple blossom must soon fade, and that all beauty must eventually pass and die. But as she pondered, the novice was suddenly startled, for it was as if a voice spoke clearly within her. "Look," said the voice insistently. "But I am looking," she replied, fixing her eyes intently upon the apple blossom. Again the voice said, "Look," and with even more intensity she focused her gaze on the beauty before her. Once more the voice spoke. "Look," it repeated. "Look with the eyes of your heart." Many years later, the elderly nun, describing the experience, wrote, "It was only when I had learned how to look in an entirely different way that the veils imposed by sense perception were lifted, and I touched the real and undying beauty signified by the apple blossom." What is this way of looking, this seeing with the eyes of the heart? Is it a fanciful illusion, an escape from the harsh realities of the real world of death and dying, a mere creation of the imagination? Or is it indeed the very opposite of this, a passing from the unreal to the real, a touching of ultimate objective reality from which the physical world derives its meaning and purpose? Clearly, to see in this way is something quite other than that which is normally understood by seeing. Indeed, the very use of the word seeing may be misleading, for it describes the function of one of the five senses, a sensual faculty which by its very nature cannot function at that level of experience described by the novice. What is beyond question is that the experience of the novice was totally in accord with that of every mystic of every age, race, and culture. But let us be clear as to what constitutes mysticism. The mystic is concerned with the path of knowledge as distinct from that of faith. That knowledge which is intuitive. Such mystical knowledge is acquired through a single-pointed or contemplative awareness. The following of such a path may be totally consistent with allegiance to the outward forms of religious orthodoxy. Conversely, the mystical path may be followed outside the context of formal religion. This seeing or knowing has nothing to do with what is commonly called clairvoyance. For the clairvoyant penetrates into that world created by the whole range of human emotions and which is ever-changing and transient. It has, therefore, no ultimate significance. Nor is this the world of the paranormal. The first of these is entered through heightened emotional consciousness, and the second through the sensitizing of the mental faculties, of which it is an extension. Contrary to popular opinion, a mystic is not one who sees visions. Indeed, it's true to say that the seeing of visions is not in itself a mystical experience. The true mystical consciousness has no sensual or emotional content. It is therefore imageless. It's true that in the following of the mystical path, visions of heavenly beings may appear. Such beings take the form and shape consistent with the conscious or unconscious beliefs of the seer. The essence of the mystical experience is union with the source, or God. The novice described her seeing as from the heart, and it is here that we find the key to understanding. For the heart, properly understood, represents the highest level at which we are capable of functioning, or the omega point of individual human evolution. It is the place where humanity and divinity coalesce, and it is from here alone that true contemplation is possible. In the last talk, we noted that spirituality can no longer be confined within traditional patterns. Today, this is particularly apparent in relation to the authentic mystical experience. As the evolution of spiritual consciousness shakes off the restraints of traditional conformity, so do mystics appear no longer as part of a religious elite. This is undoubtedly true of the young, for whom elements of this true seeing are frequently an integral part of spiritual growth and development. That which in the past, particularly in the Christian tradition, has been considered to be the prerogative of religious experts and specialists, is now central to a common life in which the many share. And as such, it is assuming a new significance which has yet to be spelled out. Let us look a little more closely at what is meant by this mystical or contemplative awareness. Contemplation means to look at the whole rather than the parts of which the whole is constituted. It is to be aware of essential being rather than diversity of manifestation. Until recent times, the method of examination employed by Western science has been to analyze and dissect in order to understand. And this process alone has proved to be a cul-de-sac. There are today, from within the scientific disciplines, some indications of a readiness to give credence to mystical cognition, that is, the recognition of the essential unity underlying all physical manifestation. At this we shall look in some detail later. Religion is able to give theological definitions to this essential unity, and Christianity does this in terms of the cosmic Christ. Contemplative awareness alone can give the experience of direct insight into the reality. Such seeing has to do with all life and all meaning. It therefore properly constitutes a philosophy of life. The essential ingredient of this philosophy is the capacity to recognize those forces which make for essential unity and which ultimately are the only factors contributing to society's greater well-being. Such insight into the whole invariably means a recognition that an appearance of superficial unity may mask deep conflicts, whereas apparent diversity screens a powerful creative unity. The true contemplative, frequently therefore, appears to be non-aligned in the religious, political, and social spheres. This is because of the knowledge that the only true alliance is with those who in some measure have broken free of the conditioning which blinds to all but the world of sense perception. It is the conscious nurturing and building up of this true alliance which is fast becoming the hallmark of the new contemplatives. The implications of this growing awareness for the evolution of humanity are far-reaching indeed, but as yet we're at the very beginning of understanding. Few as yet perceive its larger significance, and seeing from the heart is frequently thought of as concerned only with private and even isolated spiritual growth, a growth belonging therefore to only part of the total human being. What has yet to emerge into corporate consciousness is that contemplative seeing, as I have described it, is concerned with much more than individual spirituality. These powerful impulses must eventually lead to the creation of a new map of reality, one other than that furnished by the contours of the physical world as we have hitherto understood it. And if this new spirituality is to find its true fulfilment as it presses forward to the creation of new frontiers. Those who are now, albeit intuitively, moving in this direction must begin consciously to look at the implications of what is happening. To begin to grasp this larger significance, it's necessary first of all to look at the principles which operate at that level of understanding to which contemplative awareness gives access. The world with which we are concerned is that of ultimate reality. This is capable of reflection in every aspect of the created order, for it is the very life force which gives to the physical world its multiplicity of form and diversity of manifestation. It is an undying creative energy from which time and space take their being, and to which in the fullness of time they must surrender. In this world of ultimate reality, there is no duality, for that which is unreal has no vehicle or means of expression. To touch this world is to experience a reversal of values as expressed in the isolated, dualistic, physical world. All that is unreal is perfectly exorcised by that which constitutes the real. It is the world of agape, or divine love. This essence of pure love finds its highest level of expression through the human being. This is both effected by and is the perfect response to love. Perfected humanity is therefore at the peak of its expression in this world. When human beings are harmonized within themselves, they are in harmony with this world. The manner of this awakening is intuitive, but in the process of human evolution on this planet, the possibility of conscious mental cooperation is now being realized. The next stage in this process will be the beginning of an externalization of this inner life in patterns which will in turn affect individuals, then groups, then nations. Such a manifestation, or incarnation of reality into the life of the planet, must be preceded by awareness of those specific areas in which these realities penetrate this world. As we have indicated, the apex of manifestation is in and through those beings in which a true humanity is coming to birth. In his book, The Zen of Seeing, the artist F. Frank describes his own perception of this. He writes as follows: "Only very rarely have I seen a face that, fully alive, yet without a trace of falsity or pretense, showed the human in all its greatness. This was in the face of Pope John the 23rd. I saw a great beauty of the spirit. He was a fat man, not handsome, but beautiful." Here we see and recognize a creative activity more powerful in its potential than anything human ingenuity in terms of technology can create. And it is impossible in reasonable terms to evaluate the significance of this one fully human being in the raising of universal human consciousness. It is this very potential which, in the words of the Apostle Paul, the whole creation is struggling to realize. With a cosmic consciousness possessed by few, Paul writes, "The whole creation is groaning and travailing in pain, waiting for the manifestation of the people of God." In conscious cooperation with this cosmic unveiling, there can be no process of preselection, no projection of images born of preconceived notions, whether these be theological, philosophical, or scientific. For this is a seeing of things as they are. Earlier, we looked through the eyes of a young nun at the dynamic of beauty, undying and ever recreating. We looked also beyond the contours of an aging physical body, at a beauty which, operating at an even higher level, has exercised a universal influence upon humanity. True and differentiating seeing will also be aware of those facades which pass for reality, but which frequently blind us to the real. But at our present stage of evolution, such perceptions come to most of us as a spontaneous, unexpected realization. I recall this happening dramatically within my own experience. I was entering a crowded railway station during the evening rush hour. Commuters were arriving from every direction and crowding onto the trains. Suddenly, it was as if the whole scene changed, and I saw beneath the surface of this surging mass of apparent individuals. One moment, there was before me, and all around, hundreds of faces, each one a focal point of a hurrying, jostling form. The next, almost all the bodies and faces disappeared. They merged into a sea of empty, expressionless masks, tossing aimlessly in all directions. Then, like the croquet players in Alice in Wonderland, which dissolved into a pack of cards, they collapsed into nothingness. There is another dimension to this seeing, which we must now examine. For it is no detached observation, no clinical analysis, whereby the viewer and the viewed are isolated, the one from the other. For contained within it is a profound realization of an essential unity between the seer and that which is seen. It is a linking to that reality mirrored by the physical world, and of which true humanity is an integral part. It is like calling to like, a mutual recognition. The observer and the observed are one. It is, therefore, a self-knowing, and a knowing that the mystery of individual selfhood can only be understood in the context of the whole, for the whole is the self. It is here that a remarkable confirmation is now emerging from the world of science. For as we earlier indicated, there is today a convergence of understanding taking place between contemplative awareness and what has been called the new physics. This first began to emerge in the Western world when, in 1905, Albert Einstein propounded his theory of relativity. This was to lead physics to abandon forever the Newtonian theory of absolute time and absolute space. Inherent in Einstein's thinking was the conviction that space-time and the laws of motion can be defined only in reference to the condition of the observer. Suddenly, the scientific observer had become like the mystic, part of the world which he was observing. For the scientist, he himself had become part of the world of physics, and no longer, as in Newtonian physics, could the scientist consider himself to be a detached observer. In the book The New Story of Science, this leap in scientific understanding is described by the authors. They quote the physicist Max Born. No description of any natural phenomenon in the atomic domain is possible without reference to the observer. The authors then go on to say, the choice one makes about what one observes makes an irretrievable difference in what one finds. The observer is elevated from observer to participation. And again, in some strange sense, this is a participatory universe. Such a statement as this could be made by every true mystic. It is in this acknowledgement of the wholeness and interrelatedness of all creation that modern scientific developments may be said to be running parallel to the direction being taken by the new contemplatives. Yet it's important to distinguish between the two. The new physics are now demonstrating the relativity of time and space, and bringing us to the threshold of new vistas of reality, which take us beyond both. Further scientific progress may yet bring us to hitherto undreamed of revelations. The recognition of essential links between the observer and the observed is now a clear indication that consciousness both pervades and extends beyond matter, thus bringing the concept of mind within scientific cognition. Yet it is only that consciousness which proceeds from human heart-centeredness which can relate and respond to that ultimate reality to which we have referred. No scientific investigation nor progress can give birth to this level of understanding. For extension of consciousness into the beyond, or the establishing of a rapport within new dimensions, may be no more than a refined or spiritualized form of scientific materialism. Again, to penetrate beyond time and space is in itself no more an indication of union with the world of what for the mystic is ultimate reality than is a survival beyond physical death an indication of immortality. Science is properly concerned with the fact, not the quality of being. Its extending frontiers, therefore, are exclusively at that level of consciousness. For as we have seen, like calls always to like. Only that which issues from quality of being can exercise the two functions of discovering and uncovering its own counterpart. The former has always been the function of the mystic. Today's contemplatives are called also to the latter. Movement and progress in this direction can come only with that increase of wisdom which belongs essentially to a true heart-centeredness. Such wisdom will enliven all the faculties and ensure a balanced operation of the whole human being. Progress will come with the growing understanding of a new objective reality. To the physical body, the material world is objectively real. For the emotional body, the world of feeling also has objectivity. Yet, by the very impermanence and transitory nature of both these worlds, neither can provide for the contemplative an understanding of what constitutes objective reality. And it is here that those values which stem from and belong to the world of the senses is most clearly perceived. It was the turning upside down of accepted values which so characterized the ministry of Jesus. Again and again he cast aside the conventions of understanding, pointing in a direction which he said was not of this world. The kingdom of heaven, he declared, is even now among you. But only those who are prepared to become as little children may enter in. And it is only with the unconditioned mind of the child that the new contemplatives can now enter in.